You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. It's been nearly 3 years since former President Donald Trump and former Governor Scott Walker broke ground on Foxconn's planned manufacturing facilities in Mount Pleasant. They made big promises about the impact Foxconn would have on every part of the state. As Corrine Hess reports, almost none of those promises have come true.
Last week, Foxconn executives announced plans to begin manufacturing electric vehicles for a California-based startup. In a joint statement, the companies boasted the collaboration will revolutionize the automotive industry, comparing themselves to Isaac Newton. It wasn't the first time Foxconn has announced an attention-grabbing partnership. In 2019, the company was going to make automated coffee kiosks. In 2020, it was ventilators. But both projects ended soon after being announced. Assembly Minority Leader Gordon Hintz is a longtime critic of Foxconn.
Everything that they've promised so far, none of it has been true, and none of it has played out.
In 2017, Foxconn claimed it would create 13,000 jobs in the state. Hintz says Wisconsin operations have appeared to be virtually non-existent.
From the beginning, the lack of transparency, the lack of honesty, and the lack of accountability from Foxconn really plagued their overall project and investment.
Since Foxconn became a known entity in Wisconsin, the company has made promises across the state. For some people, Foxconn's arrival 3 years ago brought hope for more than just a massive manufacturing campus in southeastern Wisconsin. The worldwide company's arrival here brought a dream for new technologies and new educational opportunities. In 2019, Foxconn announced it would locate its North American headquarters in downtown Milwaukee. The company promised 500 research and development employees in the city. Milwaukee's Common Council member, Robert Bauman, whose district includes downtown Milwaukee, says he hasn't heard from Foxconn since the announcement. He says he was skeptical from the beginning.
But, these were the claims they were making, so they obviously were a huge employer, very large worldwide company. Maybe they knew something we didn't. Well, it turns out they didn't.
After the Milwaukee announcement, Foxconn made plans to open what the company called innovation centers in Racine, Eau Claire, Green Bay, and Madison. These would have been hubs where engineers could work and develop new technology. Foxconn bought buildings, but the workers never came. Kevin Vonk was a development director until August in Green Bay. He worked closely with Foxconn and says for a while it seemed real.
The meetings became fewer and far between. They had some staff turnover, and Green Bay just did not seem that was their top priority.
Foxconn didn't respond to requests for comment on the innovation centers or other questions. Technology and education seemed to be a top priority for the company. In August 2018, Foxconn announced plans to invest $100 million at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. University spokesman John Lucas says the company donated a total of $700,000, less than 1% of what it pledged. It went to research projects at the College of Engineering. Lucas says the university will continue to reach out to companies, including Foxconn, to see if they're interested in additional partnerships. In a statement to WPR, Foxconn representatives say market conditions have changed over the last 3 years. They say they're working with the state on a plan that will benefit Wisconsin taxpayers and give them flexibility. Last October, Racine County Supervisor Jody Spencer joined other elected officials on a tour of Foxconn's Mount Pleasant facility given by the company.
It was a massive building with, I would say, few people working. I guess, to be honest, I didn't know what was real and what was framed up for the touring.
When Foxconn was first announced, Spencer was a mail carrier in Racine. And like a lot of other people, she was doubtful that the company could live up to its promises. She says the tour didn't change her mind. Corrine Hess, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And now, colleges and universities straight across the country have been hit hard a year into the pandemic. Falling enrollment, lost tuition dollars, other revenue streams evaporated. A loss estimate published in the Chronicle of Higher Education last month calculated it at $183 billion, although the federal government has provided relief money with more likely on the way. What are your thoughts on fully reopening campuses? Is it time? Do you expect more layoffs or furloughs at your institution? Should colleges merge or close programs? It's 800-642-1234. Kimo Ayun is provost and executive vice president of academic affairs at Marquette University. Kimo, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate.
Well, this week, Marquette announced plans to reopen campus and the residence halls in the fall. What factors went into making this decision?
Yeah, I will tell you, we're really excited about being open in the fall. We never closed down. We did have to de-densify this semester. But when we think about fulfilling our mission, you know, being in person, giving our students the ability to worship together, be at athletic events together, engage in campus activities, grow together, this was all important. And it's something as we look at, you know, with vaccination rollout happening and where the pandemic is heading, we feel we're in really good and solid position to be back in person fully in the fall semester.
Well, let's get to vaccines in a moment, but what goes into making a decision like this to be able to gather students in these very public settings, out even, you know, at athletic events you mentioned and in other places, places of worship? You know, what safety measures are you putting in place?
Well, and obviously we're a long way off from August, and so we're months and months. If you think about where we were 6 months ago, it was a much different place. We already see the city beginning to kind of relax where it's heading. You know, I know personally, I know substantially more faculty are being vaccinated, and we're heading in the right place. We'll obviously, you know, monitor what's happening. And like we did this year, we'll put into safety protocols in order to be able to keep our students safe. We have done really well in the spring semester, and in the fall semester, we managed to maintain our campus staying open. We learned a lot.
What did you learn? What were some of those top line takeaways?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm initially, obviously, mask wearing, making sure people follow appropriate protocols, social distancing, de-densifying our residence halls. So, everything that Fauci has been saying, everything that the CD has said it to follow, it's really worked here.
When you look logistically at, say, residence halls, will you have them at capacity, do you think? Do you anticipate?
Yeah, that's our intention, is to have them at capacity. Again, I would say, as we're, you know, quite a ways away from the start of the fall semester, we've had to pivot before, meaning that we intended to do one action and we had to move to another action. Everything we are planning, we have a plan B in place, and we'll pivot if needed.
Even though we are months away, what are you putting in place now to prepare for the fall? What are the steps look like? It must be very busy.
Yeah, you know, right now on campus, we have substantial quarantine and isolation spaces. We do surveillance testing. We test all symptomatic individuals. So, we have the infrastructure in place to test and to isolate and quarantine. And to the degree to which we will need that in place in the fall semester, we will make sure that we do what we need to do in order to keep our community safe.
Let's look at vaccinations here for a moment. How are they rolling out on your campus? What do you have in place?
Yeah, so we are a vaccine provider, which will allow us to be able to vaccine eligible members as dictated by the state of Wisconsin. The vaccines are in limited supply. When we have the capacity, and we have done some vaccination, and people in our highest categories are 1A, our frontline medical people, and our nurse, people who are seeing patients, our nursing students, our physician assistant students, our dental students and staff. So we have the vaccination protocol in place, and getting the actual vaccine is determined by the state, and as we get it, we will continue to distribute it. But I will say that what I'm hearing more and more is, it gets passed around. Our faculty and staff are finding other places in Milwaukee to be able to get vaccinated.
How many vaccines have you administered so far, approximately?
I do not have that number.
Will students and staff be required to get the vaccine for fall?
Yeah, we haven't made that decision yet. That's clearly a conversation we'll need to have before we, reopen. So that is a conversation that's going to happen on campus.
What are faculty most concerned about or asking you about as they prepare to be in person, if they haven't been so already in this pandemic? What are they asking for in terms of PPE and how their classrooms would be set up?
Yeah, you know, as you might imagine, we have a very large faculty population, so it's, you know, mixed in opinion. I would say I'm hearing from more faculty that they're excited about being together. They appreciate the conversations that are had in the classrooms, but then also understand, you know, to what degree are we going to be engaging in mask wearing? To what degree will we need to socially distant be socially distant in the classroom? We just don't have those answers yet. One of the great things is our faculty have just been tremendous in being flexible, meeting the needs of our students. And so this is something we will collectively work together to fully understand as we get closer to the start of the semester.
What is masking like on campus right now?
Yeah, it's required. So, you know, everybody's wearing a mask right now on campus.
Do you feel there's compliance with that?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, like in any setting, you have some people who will not comply. But when we see noncompliance, we act on it. And we explain to them what the policies are on campus and require them to wear a mask. And I will say, my office overlooks campus. And it is rare that I see students on campus without a mask. And when I do, they tend to be when they're distanced from everyone else. So definitely when they're in crowds walking on campus, they're wearing their masks.
We have Marquette University Provost Kimo Ayun, who's with us explaining how his institution is approaching this pandemic in the months ahead. Are you concerned about discontinuing majors or merging programs amid the economic fallout? Did your college student take a gap year in the pandemic? What has that been like? Can they get back on track? Are you worried about college affordability amid job losses that have hit so many families? Share your circumstances, your questions about college campuses, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Kimo Ayun here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Marquette University Provost Kimo Ayun. Our country is home to more than 4,000 colleges and universities. Each one is on its own financial roadmap right now to try to emerge from this pandemic intact. We're zooming in on Marquette's situation and decisions moving forward. And Kimo is with us for 10 more minutes. Let's bring in a call now. Marilyn is joining us from Wauwatosa and wanting to address the layoffs. Marilyn, go ahead.
Oh, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I had to call in and express my concerns about Marquette University. My position was one of the 39 eliminated last month. And I guess looking at that bigger picture, you know, there's been news about the new business school rollout, big investment. You know, while still Marquette is cutting jobs, I've had feedback. We are a three-generation Marquette family, and I've had feedback from our children who are also alums that they feel that their alma mater is out of touch with what is going on. I also wanted to say that I think that these job cuts were just truly a drop in the bucket, affecting, you know, many people's lives while probably not addressing the root problem. And I will take my answer off the air. Thank you very much.
Marilyn, thank you for sharing those circumstances. Kimo, go ahead.
So obviously, Marilyn, thank you for your, you know, commitment to Marquette. I say a couple of things. The first thing is, we're excited about our new business building. It's going to be the first business building in the country built in a post-pandemic world. As far as we know, that building is being built fully supported by our donors. So the total $60 million cost is monies that we raised. And it's great that we have donors who are willing to invest in Marquette. And part of that is they really appreciate our mission and our ability to move forward on our mission. I guess the second part is with respect to cuts. It's been a, you know, difficult industry challenge. 650,000 jobs have been lost in the education industry in 2020. Our goal is we need to make sure we maintain our mission and keep our tuition affordable for our students. We want our students to be able to leave Marquette with the least amount of debt, which does require us to look carefully about how we resource our university. But at the end of the day, it's keep the cost down for our students and maintain a quality Catholic Jesuit education.
So you feel those 39 job cuts were able to relieve the financial pressure that Marquette is experiencing in this pandemic?
Yeah, you know, all of it. I mean, part of that is when we look at positions on campus, you know, it's about growth, and we looked about areas where we had redundancy or areas where we could pick it up in different ways. And so it was, you know, what was the staffing we need to be able to continue to do the good work we're doing?
Will there be more layoffs in the future?
We have none planned at this time, but, you know, we are a tuition-driven institution. 75% of the monies that we bring in comes through tuition. So in large parts, that's, you know, dependent on the students that are here. Like all private institutions, if your revenue is student tuition and your class drops, then you have to, you know, ask, well, how do you realign the university to be able to make sure you can properly fund it? So part of that is we don't know. You know, we know our current year class is 16% smaller than our prior year class. It's our smallest class in the last two decades. Our enrollment is looking good for this next fall semester, but we don't have that set typically until about May 1 when deposits are due.
Why didn't you go down the furlough route, you know, doing more widespread furloughs on campus?
Yeah, you know, when you look at furloughs, when we drop in enrollment, it's a four-year challenge that you have. Because when you drop your class, it's a class for 4 years. We didn't think it was appropriate to furlough our faculty and staff for 4 years. And so, that, you know, we had to address the challenge that we know is a long-term, at least four-year challenge facing us.
When you look at enrollment, you said fall enrollment is looking like it's on track at this point, but it's hard to tell until those deposits do come in and students make those final commitments. Are you concerned about declining enrollment as you look out into the years ahead, as we see a shrinking population base for these coveted students and these young people?
Yeah, that's going to be a challenge all universities are going to have to face. What I feel confident in is we've begun the conversation now. You know, they talk about demographic shifts that are coming in 2026. We know in 2008, the financial crisis hit families and fewer babies were born. But, you know, we're still several years out from that, and we are having conversations on campus in collaborations with our faculty to say, how do we make sure our university has the value add that people are looking forward to receiving? And how do we make sure they understand the value of a Catholic Jesuit education?
We're talking with Kimo Ayun, who is Provost and Executive Vice President of Academic Affairs at Marquette. And we're looking at how Marquette University is navigating these times. Are you a private university student? How has the pandemic affected your college experience? Join in at 800-642-1234. Kimo, you know, you had a very large donation last month with the nursing school, $31 million donation to overhaul the nursing college. What do you aim to do in that area?
Yeah, you know, our mission, Kate, is to serve others. We talk about being men and women for and with others, and I can't think of an area that really is at the center of that than our nurses. You know, we're looking at the possibility of, you know, being able to expand the number of nurses that graduate from Marquette. We know that there is a growing job market for nurses. We know that there is a special need for people wanting Marquette. They're in high demand. And we're anticipating to, you know, prepare over 5,000 nurses over the next decade and beyond. And that's what we'll do is we'll use this donation by Darren and Terry Jackson to grow the number of nurses and to make it an even better program than it already is.
As you look at your majors, your degree offerings, do you anticipate cutting any programs?
Yeah, there are no programs that we have on the horizon for cutting right now. like any university, you're always looking about, you know, what's in demand, what is going to be best serve your students, how you might merge programs. And so that's an ongoing process of any university. It's a process we're always going through, but there's not a specific program that is we're targeting right now.
And with the business school and breaking ground there with that new building, do you anticipate that you will change your offerings through the business school at all?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, as we're always looking to be able to create the best experience for our students. And so, you know, part of that is it really gives us the opportunity to rethink. One of the things COVID has done is provided us an insight about how to do really good online education. And I suspect in that space, we're going to have some really creative, innovative spaces that will allow people to be able to teach virtually, but also be able to flex and teach people in person as well.
As we wrap up here, I'm wondering what you could really need now. Of course, you need your students back, you need your faculty back, but are there things that could really help Marquette get back on track financially that you wish you could just, you know, wave a wand and it would be there?
If I could wave a wand, everyone would have a vaccination and we would be on the other side of COVID. When we are in person, that is when we are at our best. And COVID has strained everyone. I want not only for Marquette University, but for families and friends to be able to move freely again. That's what I hope.
Kimo, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Kimo Ayun is Provost and Executive Vice President of Academic Affairs at Marquette University. Just ahead, we meet a pair of Wisconsinites who have received the highest honor from the National Endowment for the Arts for their contributions to traditional arts. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.